Session number 10699.
Brigadier Rymer Jones, Reel 22. You were telling me about when the army returned, the fighting.
The army returned and they had frightful camps to go to. And they all were full. You couldn't persuade them otherwise. I've told you something of the conditions while I'd been there from the time I arrived until the army came back. And the army had been up there in the men on leave from Cairo and Middle East. And they'd been in Tel Aviv and had the girls and drink and brandy and all the rest of it. And they were quite determined that it was still the same. And nothing I could do, I went round with the GOC. I talked to the major generals who were in charge of the various areas of the army. But you couldn't get through to the troops at all. And so they were doing these silly things. You see, one of the things was the horrible affair, although my fellows had been murdered all over the place, when a couple of fellows came, I don't know what job they'd been on, something special, two soldiers, two officers, and they went into Tel Aviv, and there was only one other fellow with them, I think. There was supposed to be, even the army said there must be always at least five when you're going to or something. And the result is that they were kidnapped and killed. You remember the famous case. And everybody said how horrible and so on, but you see, we were doing equally bad things. The awful case of Dove Gruner, which...
This is when the army introduced... The army didn't go by your policy. And could you just explain
the
that?
Military course, we were all... You see, I was a military force too. So there were... When the famous case will give you the idea straight away. Before the army came, before the war packed up, I had a place called Rabat Gan, which was attacked by a ruse. Apparently, a British inspector of police with a swarm of Arabs with him, who was supposed to be washerwomen complaining about something, came up to this place, and of course, they were let in where the fellow on the, what we called on the diary was, and they immediately then drew up their ropes. There were very few police in there. In fact, the chap in charge was actually up at a senior station up the road visiting. And they then broke into the armory and pinched some weapons. There weren't a great many of them. And meanwhile, the day was really saved. We had fellows on the roof, which we always had to, and they were joined by one or two other fellows. And they were firing. There was a vehicle where they were taking these rifles to go away, you see. And we actually, the Jews said we killed more, but we killed one, and there was a young Jew who'd been fighting for us with the British Army, called Dove Gruner, who was dragging a case of gelignite through the wire when a very gallant little Jewish constable of mine, when they burst in first, he locked himself in the telegraph office raised the alarm, you see. Well, their boss man, he was an inspector, and his friend, they came down in a vehicle, had shot Dove Gruner on the wire and smashed his
Jawbone.
He was then removed to Acre, which was the famous prison, you know, to Acre hospital and was there long after I had gone, till the beginning of 1947, when he was considered well enough, the army to come back, you got military court, you'd got a poisonous fellow who was the town clerk of Southampton, actually, who was running that show. I was after him before I left, because he was going with impossible Arabs to their lunches and so on. And I don't know what happened in the military court, and I don't know whether the police had a hand at all. I hope not. But, of course, the army were running it in the military court, you see. I don't know what evidence police gave, but I could shoot anybody that did it. But this fellow who'd fought for us, been wounded, and so on, had just been, in the ordinary way, as many other incidents I'd had while I was there. And he'd copped it and got his jaw shot away. And as soon as he was well, they shove him in the military court and condemn him to death. I'd never used capital punishment. I was furious. And my friend Alex Aronson, who was in South France there, I've talked in my memoirs much about the Aronson Marbles family. He was sending me pages and pages of cable. Please see Mr. Churchill. Don't let this frightful thing happen. And the Jews found the answer, of course. They started the worst of all things, and that is capturing people. What do you call them?
Kidnapping.
Kidnapping people. And of course, that shook everybody. They said, all right, don't kill him yet, at any rate. And this got home, and they were so worried. He got up to the Privy Council, my friend. Now, I happened to know a very nice Jewish advocate who represented Ben-Gurion and the Jewish agency. You see? And he always, although he was, if somebody in the Jewish agency chaps was for it, he always used to defend them, you see, against us. But he remained very friendly with Catling and his boys and with me. And so he, after the war, was then coming home to Britain on business, and he always, on this particular occasion, he rang me up. I don't want to bore you with stuff you know already. And he said, Levitsky is speaking. He always spoke rather plummily. You know? I think it is, my dear sir, my turn to dispense hospitality. I am staying at the Dorchester, where I believe the kitchens are said to be good. That is to say, the cuisine. He didn't know what was going to happen later. So I went to lunch with him. And afterwards I said, now, I forget what his name was, Aaron or something like that. I said, Aaron, tell me what actually happened in this awful case. He said, well, as you know, I was representing the Jewish agency and was their man for dealing with things like this. Whereas old so-and-so was representing Begin in those days from the Lloyd point of view. He said, when the things got so hot at home and the Privy Council took it on, they sent out and they said, go and see Dovgruner and get him to sign this appeal and it'll all be finished. So he said, I went up there and I spent a long time with him. He was a fine boy. And he said, yes, I will. So he said, I went off and reported and they were going to send it up for him to sign. He said, this other bloke, oh, he's a shocking bloke, representing Begin, apparently went into him after and said, look, you know, you can be a martyr if you want to still, for the cause. Zionism. I say, he said, all right. So the hanging was to take place with a couple of other fellas. I don't know what they're for. And there was a rule that at hangings, the district commissioner, British, had to attend, and also the governor of the prison. Well, as you know, I'd got rid of prisons. I don't believe in the head copper also being the head torturer. So there was a very fine old fellow, George, who had been a policeman from 1926, and when he was transferred to the prison service, and he was the governor, you know. So he was supposed to attend there. He said, God bless him, I'm not going. He got the sack. Oh, I was so angry. I can always remember the old comrades when we got going in England, when they went all round the map. And I see him and his wife. They were both blonde, very nice looking. They danced very nice, always together. And I thought, how nice that is, poor old George. And she died, and he became very sour. And I heard that he was down at Hampton. I went down to see him. He was running on his own a little hardware shop outside the station. This senior fellow who'd been in a Palestine piece and had given his all to his country. And he was very sour at first. He became very friendly, and we wrote to each other till he died then. Oh, George. But meanwhile, of course, Dov Grunner had been hanged. I said, bloody hell, he was my prisoner. What a devil disease. This is all come, Monty was CIGS. This is the whole time saying, must be rougher out there, and so on. And so Dov Grunner was killed. There's a shrine to him now. And this was one of the things which, believe me, hastened us packing up and running away from Palestine. It's an appalling story, my friend. And I don't know. When I went out there recruiting for home, you know, I got 400 of the best for the Metropolitan Police. I didn't like what I found at all.
Why not? Could you just explain it?
Well, I'm not going to let you out on that altogether, but there were... One thing, when I was up at...
What year was this you went back? Sorry, I better just get that. You...
Well, there were... This is the Police and Prisons Commission recruiting from the Palestine Police in January 1948, just before they left, you see. I suppose I oughtn't really to have gone out because it wasn't fair on my successor, really. But I didn't like at all what I found.
How had things changed? Was it the influence of the army or what?
No, it was... you see, they'd done one desperate thing, they and the army. They'd all retired into security zones. When I was in Haifa with a prison governor also with me, We too were doing that area for recruiting. And we were staying in one of three security zones in Haifa, of all the nonsense you've heard. We were down at the, put into the hotel down there, you see. And I saw some very serious breaches of discipline.
So you felt the force had deteriorated in the 2 years?
I thought that some of the running of the force, when I was up at Safed, that's at the top of what they call the West Bank now, right in the north. And we were doing that then. It was a very interesting time to me because there was a very dear, I was going to say friend of mine, but one of my, he was a deputy superintendent then. He had been in charge of the Jerusalem CID during the famous thing which I call the last bus from Hebron, where he did a most remarkable thing against an Arab leader, bandit, who was, we heard, was taking over the last bus out of Hebron, full of Arabs, and was going to hold it up with his gang. So the Bey again came to me and he said, will you allow this chap to run this show? What he wants to do is to go dressed as Arab with all his men and take over the bus himself. He's a lovely bloke, this. He's one of the best chaps and very gallant. And I said, well, that's just like you, you know. You always come to me when you think if anything goes wrong, they'll say, it's you, you see. I said, all right, you can do it, but don't come weeping to me. So they went down there and they took over the bus. And sure enough, when they got outside Hebron, there was this fellow standing in the middle of the road and his chaps spread out, you see, waving guns. And so my friend shot the bandit chief, who fell into a low ditch alongside the road. Now, the driver of the van was also a policeman dressed as an Arab, of course. And when they were tackling the rest of the gang, he saw this wounded chief climbing out of the thing and with a bead on the boss, my friend. So he leapt out of his driving seat, grappled with this fellow and killed him. So I was seeing during this recruiting business, long after, of course, he was the boss man then of that part of the globe up there. And I'd had drinks with him, with the prisoner governor with me, and his wife, before I'd left. What I didn't know was, as soon as we'd gone, he went out. There was fire between a Jewish settlement and an Arab village going on. So he walks out, typical of him, with a cane, holding it up, saying, stop, you know, naughty boys. Of course, he got one in the arm then himself. That was typical of him. He'd enjoy that. He's a lovely man. Well, off we went. Of course, we had a vehicle that had been provided with a police driver and one other. And when we got to Ramallah, this was the time when the Syrian irregulars, Arabs, were haunting the place, you know. Before the war broke out, after we left, you see. And they had just attacked Tiberias. At any rate, when we got to Ramallah, I've got a picture of them. I'll give it to you one day. Four Arabs on the road holding us up. Holding us up? Palestine, please. It was stopped us. I said, well, what's happening to the police, really? They said, oh, that's nothing. The chief of police, Middleton, superintendent, was stopped in his car by these chaps, and they made him get out and walk home. I said, Palestine policeman? I said, we're going mad, you see. Now, this fellow, afterwards, he went out to Malaya, my friend. I name slipped me now. A wonderful chap. He'd done frightfully well everywhere. And on the way, he lived in Brighton, and he'd bought up some property in those days, which he had 10 flats nearly on the Brighton front, I tell you. And his wife was a great friend of mine, or his widow. So I arranged for one of my many parties. What's the term? Parties here. There were six of us over at the pub. And he was one of them, you see. He was so nice. And afterwards, when I saw them off, he went round the corner of the building to hit the road. He looked round with a smile. I said to my wife afterwards, I don't like that, you know. So nice, and I felt that something was going to happen to him, and he knew it. So I said, well, we'll have another party, and they'll have their wives, these people. So I rang up his place, Brighton, and his wife answered. I said, I want you to come to a party. And she said, oh, he's dead. He had a heart attack and he died on his way to hospital. But he was one of the many. I mean, he could have gone on. He would have been, again, a chief of a big, marvellous bloke. But that was Palestine in the end, my visit to Palestine.
Did you have any success in? You were recruiting for the Metropolitan Police, were you?
Yeah.
From the
I was for the Metropolitan Police.
Did you have any success?
Yes, Sir Harry Studdy, great friend of mine, the Chief Constable of West Yorkshire, was also in the party. I said, well, you're the senior chap, you see.
Did you have any success?
I had a great success. I got nearly a lot. I got 400. 400, and they all did splendidly.
Didn't the Palestine police object to you taking, or was it because they knew that it was all breaking up? It was all
no, they were within weeks of leaving, and then they had this awful massacre, which this blasted Shamir was responsible for, of. What's the name of the village? Just north of Jerusalem, where they killed all the men, women and children, although there was an unwritten understanding between them and the Jewish settlement that they'd leave each other alone. Then Begin's boys went in with also some Stern gang, and they killed all the men, women and children. And then they talk about the Arab who were trying to get back, who they chased out of the country. You know, they got rid of about 1 million Arabs through these frightfulness. And when they try to get back again, of course, they're the terrorists.
There's just a couple more points now. We're getting near to the end. But much earlier, during the war, there was an attempt by the Germans to restart the Arab revolt, so to speak. Which you mention in your memoirs, and in it you say that you had knowledge they dropped someone in the area, and that you took a series of measures to neutralise it and to stop it in its tracks. Could you just tell us a little bit about that situation and how you went about stopping sort of a revival of the Arab revolt? This, I think it was in 1944.
Yes, well, we've got very much a Jewish revolt on our hands, as you know. Owing to this rough stuff before the war down in Palestine, Monty's lot, Amin, Haji Amin, who was the Mufti, the leader in other words, he wasn't a very good chap, but he got so fed up with the way that the military were using the military courts and so on, and were hanging people right, left and centre, that he pushed off and joined up with Hitler. Well, now, out of the blue, I suddenly got news, which was very alarming, really. What had happened was that down in Beersheba, in the Negev, that's the desert down there, they found that a thing that had never happened, the Arabs were passing gold in purchasing things, which was an unheard of thing. And digging into it, they gradually found that Hitler and Haj Amin had sent a plane, there might have been two, I don't know, large planes, with four Arab officers and two high-ranking German officers who had the code names of Lion and Tiger, sent them out with masses of arms in these large planes, masses of money, and all the doings to raise the Arabs again. The Arabs had never settled down after their handling up to the war breaking out. And it was very easy to set things alight again. Well, when we heard this, when I was given it by the CID, Catling was very much in on this again. I said, all right, this has got to stop. If there was anything of a success, because you've got the Jewish trouble, you've got the Arabs in, so it'll be hell. And you'll lose the right of the Allied line, which is Palestine, which is Palestine, and that means the land route to the Far East and India. That'll go too. And you'll get the war extended at least a year or a year and a half. Although the Russian steamroller is starting, there's only got a long way to go yet. And so that it's all in. We grabbed, they were really part of our show. I know that the Frontier Force, that I had a bit of them.
The Transjordan Frontier Force, do you mean?
Yes. When you say Transjordan Frontier Force, it's the Palestine border of Transjordan. Do you see what I mean? The border of, they were actually supposed to be our people. They were a regular contingent, although they had Arab. So it was everybody on, and we swept up from the south, and we soon collected the Tiger. And
the Tiger, sorry?
Tiger was one of these German officers. Lion and the Tiger, with their code names. And the Lion couldn't run fast enough to get away, and he went over to into Syria, into the Lebanon, then to Syria, and we didn't hear anything more of him at all. Well, now the thing was, of course, the Arab bad boys were waiting to join in with these blokes, you see. So